You are listening to the Mid-Current Church Podcast. Today's message is week 3 in our series, Let's Take a Break. For more information and to visit us online, go to midcurrentchurch.org. And now, here's Pastor Sten with this week's message.
Hey, Mid-Current, how's everybody doing today?
Good.
Doing all right? Good. If you didn't catch it at the beginning, my name is Sten. I'm the pastor here. I want to welcome you. We are absolutely thrilled to have you with us. I love nothing more than seeing this place fill up with more chairs and more people on a Sunday morning. So we're glad to have you here. I also love nothing more than to know that no matter where people are today, we've got handfuls of people jumping online to be with us as well. So we're glad to have you here in whatever capacity that is happening with us. If you are new or newer to Mid-Current, this is a really great Sunday for you to be with us. We are actually, as you heard, bringing an end to what has been a really great series that we have called Let's Take a Break. The idea behind it was somewhat simple. For those of us, especially with school-aged kids, there has been one thing on the mind over the last few weeks, and it has been spring break. And so it was my intention over the last couple weeks to give each of you, I don't know what you had going on, but my hope was to give each of you permission to take a vacation. And as much as I wish I could have sent you on a vacation to somewhere, you know, warm or somewhere tropical, unfortunately, you know this, I couldn't do that. And so the vacation that I wanted to give you permission to take was a vacation from your problems. Any What About Bob fans here? A couple hands going up. Bob Wiley, Lake Winnipesaukee, Dr. Leo Marvin, we right? Okay, well, here's the deal. I am no Dr. Leo Marvin, but I still wanted to do my best to help you all, to give you permission to take a vacation from your problems, hopefully a permanent one. So in week one of this series, just a quick recap here. In week one of the series, we talked about worry, the reality that a lot of us do experience worry and anxiety in our lives. And then I talked about all the what ifs that race through our mind at any given moment. Or what if this happened? What if that happened? And what I wanted us to understand is that ultimately worry is a waste. God promises to provide for us daily bread, daily provision, daily strength. And when we worry, ultimately what we're doing is we're wasting today's promises on tomorrow's problems. And the result is that we very rarely have enough for today, and each day becomes a grind. Just last week, I introduced you to what is sometimes referred to as the comparison trap and the dangerous game that we play when we measure ourselves and our worth and our value, either way, when we measure ourselves up against those on our left and those on our right. And what we learned, thanks to some wisdom from the Bible, is that there is absolutely no win in comparison. Today, I want to talk about a third and yet another problem I think that weasels its way into our lives that I hope that we would learn to take a break from. Most of the time, this problem that I want to talk about today, most of the time, it is way easier to identify and to point out and to be annoyed by its existence in the lives of other people. Okay, especially young kids, or maybe my kids at least. But I think if we stopped long enough to examine our own lives, I think we would see too that it exists in our own lives as well. The problem that I'm talking about is complaining. Complaining. Okay, I'll be very honest with you. I don't think complaining would even make it onto the list if I asked all of you to create a list of the biggest problems in your own personal life right now. Maybe worry would be on that list. Maybe comparison would be on that list like we've talked about. I don't think complaining would make it onto your list of problems happening in your own life. But its existence, I would say, its existence in your life, in whatever form or fashion it exists, it is still incredibly problematic. In fact, there was a recent study by Stanford University that found that complaining reduces the size of the hippocampus in the brain, which is responsible for memory making and also responsible for problem solving. Okay? No wonder my kids cannot seem to solve a single problem on their own. Okay, for real though, the study found that engaging in this activity of complaining, or get this, or simply hearing someone complain for more than like 30 minutes a day, this is what the study found, it could physically damage our brains. Okay, so it might not make the list of the biggest problems in your life right now, if you were making a list for yourself. Might not make the list, but how much it exists in your life and in my life, I think is absolutely worth our time and our attention. It is absolutely worth figuring out how we might take a break from complaining for good, right? For our own good and for the good of those around us each and every day. I know for one, I don't want to be the cause of brain damage in the people that are around me every single day. And I don't think you do either. And so the question then, when it comes to complaining, the question is, how do we stop? If it's this destructive and it's this dangerous, is it possible that we could take a break from this in our life? And if so, how do we stop complaining? Lucky for you and me, I think if we really dive in a little closer, I think the Bible actually provides some clues for us as to how it is that we might learn to take a break from complaining. What we're going to see playing throughout the pages of Scripture, what I think we're going to see today is two vastly different approaches to the responses, we're gonna see two different approaches and responses to the circumstances that may or may not go our way in life. As we dive in, we're gonna see two approaches, two responses, two ways to focus on the circumstances that may not go our way. And we need to pay close attention to both. The first example, the first approach, the first is to focus. If we really want to think about how much we complain or not, the first is to focus on external conditions. And as we keep on working our way through, we'll see exactly how well this works out. One option we might think to ourselves to stop complaining is to change the external conditions that exist around us every single day. To pull the strings in an attempt to get what we want, to make sure that the ball will bounce our way, and to eliminate all of the less than ideal circumstances in our life. Okay, that's one approach that we could take. Change the external circumstances. But what I want you to see as we begin here today is how exactly that plays out. Truthfully, this is the approach of, at one time in history, this is the approach of God's people. They're known as the Israelites, back in the days directly following their monumental escape from slavery in Egypt. Okay, here's what that looked like if we keep going just a little bit further today. When God delivers the people out of slavery in Egypt, they escape miraculously, and almost immediately they find themselves at what seems to be a dead end. They're standing on the shore of the Red Sea. An Egyptian army is closing in on them, and they are trapped between the army and between the water, and they have nowhere to go. And then God does something amazing. If you grew up in church or if you've read the stories, you know that God parts the seas. Amazing. He parts the seas and he provides a way forward, dry path forward for the Israelites. At the moment of their greatest fear, what are we going to do? We just escaped from freedom and now it's all going to end right here. God provides a way forward. Okay, this moment, if you ask me, this moment should be permanently etched into the minds of those who were there forever, of how good and how amazing God really is. He just parted the seas. This moment should have been etched in their minds forever. And yet, soon after, they seem to have forgotten the incredible power of God and his provision for them. They've forgotten. And all of a sudden, life is getting a little bit tough. Look at Exodus chapter 16. This is just in the moments directly following. It says, in the desert now, the whole community, what? They complained about Moses and Aaron, okay? God just showed up amazingly, but it only takes a few days before they're now complaining about Moses and Aaron. What are they complaining about? Okay, now they're hungry. And if you actually keep reading in here in Exodus, you're going to see that they're actually getting a little bit upset about it. So now they're not just hungry, now they're getting hangry. Okay, you didn't know that was a biblical term, did you? They're getting hangry. Okay? This is how it plays out. God is listening to them. And once again, he provides for them. And there in that moment, and for every day forward, God begins to drop a bread-like substance. They called it manna. He starts to drop manna for them every day from the sky. Some Bible scholars think it's the earliest form of Instacart. Okay, that was like two very bad jokes back to back. I'm sorry about that. Okay, it's amazing though. It's amazing, right? Every day. Bread delivered right to their doorsteps. You would think that the Israelites would be the most grateful people on the planet. Not quite. It doesn't even stop there. Let's keep reading. It's now been just about 3 days in total, and now the people are not just hungry, but now they're actually beginning to get thirsty. Look at Exodus chapter 17. It says, so once more the people complained against Moses. Give us water to drink, they demanded. Why did you bring us out of Egypt? Are you trying to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? Okay, they're thirsty now. And they're letting Moses know about it. And so Moses, what does he do? He asks God for help, and God miraculously provides fresh water from them. If you're familiar with the story, it's amazing. God tells him to go strike a rock with their staff, and water comes flowing out. So once again, the people complained and God provided for them. Crisis averted now, right? Not quite. Okay. The next few books of the Old Testament continue to tell the story of God's people wandering in the desert. They've got food, now they've got water, they've got freedom. You think that they would be good to go. Not quite. Apparently, the complaining continues. And it grows, and it starts to spread, and it becomes contagious, and it becomes destructive. Look at the situation, how it's described some time later. This is the book of Numbers. It says this, then the foreign rabble, these were kind of the new guys, the outsiders, the riffraff guys on the fringe, who were traveling with the Israelites, they began to crave the food of Egypt. And the people of Israel also then began to complain, oh, for some meat. They exclaimed, we remember the fish we used to eat for free in Egypt, and we had all the cucumbers and melons and leeks and onions and garlic we wanted, but now our appetites are gone. All we ever see is this manna that God provided for us when we were hungry and when we asked for it. Are you catching this, right? Did you see this cycle? Do you see this pattern? Did you hear all of the complaining? It's almost, if you really look at it, it's almost comical. Remember the food we ate for free? You were slaves. That food wasn't free. You paid for it with your lives, okay? And so, but it doesn't matter. On and on they go. They complain and God provides. And then things get a little bit uncomfortable and they complain some more and then God provides again. And then things get a little bit more uncomfortable so they start complaining more and then God keeps showing up and yet they always keep finding something to complain about. The book of Psalms even kind of looks back on all this. And the writer of the Psalms gives kind of a summary of that entire situation. Look at what it says. It says, the people refused to enter the land, for they wouldn't believe his promise to care for them. Instead, they grumbled, they complained in their tents, and they refused to obey the Lord. See, folks, not only is complaining contagious, not only did it spread among the people, but it's also dangerous, and ultimately it leads us far from God. The point of all this is to demonstrate for us that a change in external circumstances If that's our approach to quit complaining, to take a break from complaining, what we've got to understand is that a change in external circumstances rarely does anything to change the amount of dissatisfaction we seem to be able to find no matter where we go. In fact, if a change in the external circumstances, if a change in the external conditions of our lives, if it could truly help us to quit complaining, then here's what that would require. You would have to make sure that your grades are always A's, your dates are always cute, traffic is always light, traffic lights are always green, your coffee is always hot, your order is always right, TSA security lines are always empty, your gas is always full of gas, and gas is never more than $2, your bills are always paid, and your in-laws are all in therapy. That sounds amazing, all of that, doesn't it? If that was my life, or even a slice of it, I wouldn't complain. But you know as well as I know that that just isn't possible, is it? And it really never will be for us to be able to control the external conditions that much in our lives. And so it seems to me that if we're waiting on external conditions to change before we quit complaining, then we're going to be waiting a very, 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 very long time. Which brings me then to a second option. Brings me then to a second approach for how it is that we might attempt to take a break from complaining in our everyday life. And it's not an approach that focuses on the external conditions, but rather on the internal conditions. The man that we refer to as the Apostle Paul, he gives us a clue as to what that looks like exactly. Paul was one of the very first Jesus followers, one of the very first church planters and overall church leaders in this Jesus movement. And here's what he has to say. Here's what he writes to Jesus followers just like you and me in the book of Philippians. Here's what he says. He says, "For I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances." Whatever the circumstances, as in no matter what, whether I have everything or nothing, he goes on to say, whether I'm winning or losing, whether I have a full stomach or an empty one, whether I'm living in plenty or living in want, or whether I'm living in Viking country or Packer country, I'll let you be the judge of which way I'm leaning on that one. For Paul, it did not matter. He learned, he says, how to be content no matter the conditions. Okay. Now, just in case you're thinking, okay, well, of course, the Apostle Paul, Mr. Church Boy himself, of course he would have like the most perfect sounding answer here. Don't mistake his attitude and don't mistake his optimism as naive or as innocent or as ignorant. This dude has been through it all. He started out as a religious fanatic who actually murdered Christians, people who began to turn their hearts and their lives toward this Jesus character. Then God got a hold of his life and turned his entire heart toward Jesus too. And then his entire mission in his life became telling people about Jesus all over the world as they knew it. And along the way, right, because of this new mission that he was on along the way, he was shipwrecked, stranded on a desert island. He was imprisoned and he was threatened, all because of the work that he had committed to and the message that he wanted to spread. So he is no choir boy just living some small, sheltered, you know, kind of happy-go-lucky life. And yet, this is his takeaway from it all. He says, "I have learned to be content in whatever the circumstances." What's driving that? What is the source of that kind of steadiness? Look what he says next. He says this, "For I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength." I can do everything, he says, through Christ who gives me strength. It's not the smooth sailing that gives me strength. It's not a pain-free or a worry-free life that gives me strength. It's not dropping gas prices or faster checkout lines. It's not 5G signals in more places that you go today. It's not kids these days finally learning the value of hard work that is going to satisfy whatever it is that you are looking for. It's not a president who has the right letter etched next to his or her name. And it's not Amazon getting back to being able to guarantee two-day shipping. You know that's what we're paying for, right? Two-day shipping. No. It's not any of that or anything else that is going to give us strength. Paul says it is Christ who gives me strength. It's not outer alignment. It's an inner assurance. It's an inner confidence. It's an inner foundation. And so when we compare these two approaches to how we respond to the disappointing experiences in life, here's what I think we learn about complaining. That complaining is not the result of your current conditions. Complaining, on the other hand, results from the current condition of your heart. Okay. Complaining, and it's not the normal, the natural, the expected result of your current conditions. Complaining results or doesn't result from the current condition of your heart. And friends, if your heart ain't right, nothing else will be. That the book of Proverbs says it like this: above all else, guard your heart, for everything that you do flows from it. Okay? It doesn't say that everything you do or that everything you have or that everything you experience, it doesn't say that every disappointment that you eliminate in your life will contribute to it. No, it says everything that you do will flow from it. See, too often we're tempted to believe that if we can just, you know, get what's on the outside all lined up, well, then we'll be good on the inside, right? If all this is good out here, then I'll be good in here. But I would argue, with the help of these examples from the Bible, I would argue that that's just not quite how it works. In fact, I would say it's quite the opposite. That when we take care of what's on the inside, it will have a way of taking care of whatever it is that is going on the outside. Because complaining, it is not the normal and the natural result of your or my current conditions. But it does, and it will result if the current condition of your heart and my heart is not what it should be. Friends, the truth is, some of you, I would say, from my perspective, some of you here are spending every single ounce of energy you have to pave over every bump in the road, to iron over every wrinkle that may pop up in your life. You would do anything to eliminate any potential discomfort in your life or in your kid's life that any of you might experience. And if you stopped long enough, maybe you could admit to yourself that you're absolutely exhausted going through life like that. I mean, every day in this way, right? Every day is like a giant game of whack-a-mole, right? Where you've convinced yourself that life will be good or that life will be better if you can just bop every single problem or inconvenience or discomfort on the head and make it go away. It's tiring. Okay? And the danger, I think, is that you end up a little bit like the Israelites were described. They're disgruntled and with life and ultimately becoming disinterested with God. Others of you, quite honestly, others of you, if I'm being truthful here, you have, in many ways, you have successfully paved over most bumps in the road. You have successfully ironed out most wrinkles in your life. And truthfully, you have set up a pretty nice and comfortable life for yourself. You've created for yourself as close to a pain-free and a discomfort-free life as you can. And yet, if somebody could peer straight into your heart and straight into your soul, I think they'd see that you still are not fully happy. I think they'd see that you are still not completely at rest. There's still an absence of peace. There's still an absence of true joy in your life. And if you were honest with yourself or others, you might admit that something just isn't right. And you know it. And you feel it. So might I just suggest then, if any of this, a little piece of it, a little part of it, if any of it that I'm describing feels true of you, might I just suggest then a quick examination of your heart, right? Maybe it's possible that the disappointment that you always seem to find, maybe it is not the result of some missing puzzle piece out here that you're trying to get your hands on, but maybe it's the result of a missing piece to the puzzle right in here. Friends, I would say that puzzle piece has a name. And his name is Jesus. And that changes everything. Right? He could change us, and he could change the very communities that we call home. See, I just can't help but think about, I can't help but imagine a group of people so unshakable, so steady, so confident, so full of peace, so full of joy, so full of just genuine contentment that nothing rattles them. Okay? Democrat or Republican office won't shake them. Gas at $1 or $4 didn't matter. Waitress was new. It's all good. Order was wrong, no problem, right? Kids aren't like they used to. Same was true when we were kids too. See, I think someone like that with this kind of attitude, I have to think, someone like that would be a very, very attractive and a very contagious and a very influential kind of person to work for or to work with or to live next to or to be married to. And the truth is, it very well could be you, and it could be me, and it could be us. And I'll tell you what, that kind of attitude, that type of that confidence that's so rare today, I think that type of attitude and confidence, I think that would put the world on notice. So Mid-Current Church, let's put the world on notice. Let's put Hudson and River Falls in Spring Valley, and New Richmond, and Somerset, and Baldwin, and the East Metro too. Let's put them all on notice. Let's let us be a house that demonstrates for the world where it is that true joy and true confidence and true contentment really comes from. It's not from anything that this world can offer us or do for us, but only what Jesus Christ has already done for us. For you and I can do all things through Christ who gives us strength. That's not out here. It's right in here. And let me then just close by saying this. If you have never said yes to a relationship with Jesus. Said yes to that source of power, that source of peace, that source of joy and contentment in your life, then I want to invite you and encourage you to do that today. I want to encourage you not to spend another second of your life banking on the circumstances of your life out here to make you whole. And I want to encourage you and challenge you to open your heart, open your life to Jesus and the one who promises to be the constant in your life, whatever the circumstances. If that's you, here's what I want you to do. I want you to yourself to pray this prayer right along with me as we all close our eyes and bow our heads this morning. God, there are some of us here who we are feeling the fatigue and the exhaustion of paving over or ironing over every single discomfort or inconvenience in our lives. And I'm not saying we just give up and do nothing, God, but I just wonder if there are some people here who are truly tired from playing that game and from carrying that weight. God, I thank you for being a God who says, are you tired? Are you worn out? Right, throw your cares, throw your burdens onto me. And so God, if there is anyone here today, right, whose heart isn't right, whose heart doesn't have that missing puzzle piece that has your name on it, I pray right now in these moments that they would open their hearts to you, that they would say yes to you, to a relationship with you. Say yes to the peace and to the confidence and the assurance that you promise to provide for us, whatever the circumstances. God, I believe there is someone here today, someone watching online, who is ready to raise their hand to say yes to you and the promises you offer to them. God, for all of us here, would you help us to put focus in the right places? God, would you help us in all things to focus on the inside, on the internal conditions rather than the external conditions, to move forward with the peace and the rest and the confidence and the contentment that we know you provide for us and offer to us every single day. God, as we do, I pray that we as individuals, as marriages, as families, as a church, God, I pray that we would put the world on notice for where it is our joy and our strength comes from every single day. We give you thanks for this time to be together, and we pray all of these things in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen. Hey, it is so, so good to have you here, to have this room full today. Before you go, I just want to very sincerely say to you, whether you're here on site or whether you're tuning in online right now, if you are really at a place in your life where you are wanting to, or you just did say yes to Jesus, right? To open your heart and your life to that source of strength and that source of joy. We here at MidCurrent, I desperately would love to know. In fact, we'd love to, if this is you, we'd just love to have you send an email to yes@midcurrentchurch.org. You can just put a few words. You can just say, I said yes. And I would love to follow up with you to help you take whatever step is next for you in a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. We're so thrilled to have you here with us, and we look forward to next Sunday. We'll be back here at 10:30 as we begin a very brand new message series, and we'd absolutely love to have you here for it all. Have a great rest of your afternoon. We'll see you again soon. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from MidCurrent Church. Visit us online during the week at midcurrentchurch.org and connect with us on Facebook and Instagram.